Are you also tired of one-size-fits-all weight loss plans? Meet Noom, the personalized solution that meets you where you are. Noom is able to understand your unique needs, from dietary restrictions to medical concerns. Unlike restrictive programs, Noom embraces your lifestyle and choices. Discover a sustainable approach to weight loss, tailored just for you. Honestly, Noom felt like it was made for me. It's not just about what I eat. It's about understanding why. With Noom, I've learned so much about myself and built healthier habits that stick. It's all about progress, not perfection. Say goodbye to restrictive diets and experience the Noom app for yourself with personalized lessons and expert coaching. Noom's psychology and biology-based approach has helped over 5.2 million people achieve their goals. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Are you ready? It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne. Comics.
It's great to have you on board for episode 195 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week you'll get to enjoy my wonderful conversation with Daniel Corey, probably best known for his Moriarty series from Image Comics a while back, but who has released a new book called Bloodworth. It has to do with crime solving in the future, involving social networking and mind-reading technology called ThoughtShare. We discuss the characters and we discuss the book in depth. That includes some interesting things that even appear on the cover. Daniel also updates us on Red City and the aforementioned Moriarty, so be sure to listen because you're going to enjoy what he has to say. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. I want to welcome back to the podcast Daniel Corey, creator of the wonderful Moriarty series that I really liked, and Red City, and he's got another future crime comic that has just come out called Bloodworth. How are you doing today, Daniel?
Excellent. How are you?
Good. It's good to talk with you again. You and I seem to like future crime stories. Your Red City was great, and this Bloodworth, which just came out, is also terrific. I really like it. It's just a one-shot so far. Is there any possibility of it moving on into...
Yeah, it's possible. Yeah, I'm putting this one out myself through my Danger Cat label. So we're going to kind of test the waters and see what we can do right now. So it's 99 cents. You can go on the Comixology and sample it and see how you like it. And now, seeing how response is, we can hopefully do more.
Mm-hmm. Is Comixology the main place to get it?
Yeah. It'll be available in my personal Danger Cat store online as well eventually. But right now, Comixology is the main platform.
Okay, why don't we dive right into it and talk what this story is about? Because when I read the story, it was actually a little frightening. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Go ahead and talk about what the notion is. I'd rather you explain it than me try to jump in.
Okay, yeah. So what it is kind of in a not too distant future, and there's a new practice of social networking. It's called ThoughtShare, and people think. And what they're doing is they can upload memories. Not the way we do now where we upload pictures or QuickTime movies, but actual memories, like from their head, to translate it into holographic video or what have you. So they call that thinking. Mm-hmm. And cities have like digital ticker tapes of people's memories floating around for everyone to see. It's become very fashionable just to basically share everything and have no privacy at all. But of course, the criminal element wants to keep some things private. With this new technology that everybody has, the FBI has this special squad called the Ghost Squad, where that's kind of their nickname that people have given them. They can go into people's minds and tap the memories that people don't want to share. and basically enter into the memories and see the memories play out around them like a virtual reality movie. And so, you know, they'll do this to solve crimes, but criminals know how they can work. So criminals have ways to combat this. So it ends up becoming a cat and mouse game inside your mind, cops and robbers inside your mind. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm really fascinated by it because there's so many aspects of this that just intrigue me. Let's talk a little bit about it from the police perspective. These days, not everybody's as fond of the police as they may have been in the past. Mm-hmm. And if you have police officers who might be able to explore your thoughts and access thoughts that you may not want them to be able to access, well, there's going to be more people today probably than have been in the past. They're going to be unhappy with that.
Yeah.
What got you into the concept of this? I mean, how did you think about this and how did you come up with all this?
Well, it's just a matter of there's no privacy anymore and people just put the most inappropriate things up on Facebook, Twitter, whatever, personal things, you know, all these reality shows that we see now. It's just like too much sharing, too much, you know, and it just seems like it's going to get worse. And, you know, how's that going to shape society? How are people going to find new ways to share? You know, how are they going to find new ways to embarrass themselves? And then how is you know, the government going to respond? How is law enforcement going to respond? How is the criminal community going to respond? Because everybody's going to be cashing in. How are the corporations going to be responding? You know, there's all these issues with Google reading your email and, you know, spamming you accordingly and whatnot. So if sharing memories is possible and probing, invading somebody's mind and looking at their memories and looking at their thoughts is a possibility, and what a corporation is going to be doing. How are they going to be trying to get advertising into your head, literally?
Well, I got a huge kick when you were talking about people sharing too much on Facebook. When Facebook first came out, there were a lot of people that felt like they had to tell everybody what they were doing all day. You know, somebody would get up, they just got out of bed, they're in the bathroom, they have to say, well, I'm in the bathroom now. Yeah. And there's just some information I don't need to know about people. And that's one of them. I don't care what you're doing as far as those things go. Don't let me know your bodily functions are appropriate or not. But there's that possibility. And, you know, there's a possibility of abuse along these lines. You mentioned the government, too. I mean, as far as governments tend to overreach rather than underreach, especially in, if, let's say, something happened like 9/11, and all of a sudden now there's a need to find the right person, and they will go after that person with all that they have. Is that something that you're considering? Should the story move forward, are you going to have that kind of event take place? Are we going to get to examine what the government would think about these things in different aspects?
Yeah. I mean, what we'll be dealing with in the larger story of Bloodworth is a lot of conspiracy type of things. And what I would do is just kind of try to paint the future as I imagine it. I'm not going to have people monologuing about the unjustness of this. We would just present it to the audience and let them make their judgment on it. You know, this story that came out on Comixology has to do with them trying to figure out if this bank teller was in on a robbery, and they kind of like invading this private citizen's mind. Oh, it's very unethical, but there's no stop to judgment. There's no monologuing about it. It's like, just here, take it in, all of its horror, you know? And also there's this strange flip side of, well, they are catching a dangerous criminal. Maybe it's kind of okay. So it's complicated. It's a thing you can't really resolve in one conversation. Of course, it would be better, though, perhaps, if we weren't doing such things. We could just have that one conversation and say, let's not be invasive, but it's going to happen. So it's going to happen.
See, that's always a possibility is, should we be doing this instead of how will we do it? And two things I really like about it is you will always explore concepts and show us, not tell us, which too many comics, I think the word balloons are so massive I can't read them fast at all. And the other thing that you're doing, too, is building the characters and helping us to understand them. So I just think that's one of the great things. And speaking of which, the reason why this is called Bloodworth is because that's the last name of the lead detective in this group.
Yeah. So it's FBI Special Agent Brenda Bloodworth. So, yeah, she's tough. She's smart. She's just the top of her game in the law enforcement community. And she's basically a pioneer and in charge of this groundbreaking way of fighting crime because she's simply the best there is. And we'll find out more about her later. But she comes from something of a dynastic family. Her father's a senator and sort of a well-known gadabout and whatnot. She has a very rarefied position in society, basically, is what I'm trying to say, and kind of well-educated, but she's constantly working to stay ahead of that and to do something with it. She's trying to do good, you know, but as you go into people's minds, you know, you go into people's minds so often and you feel what they feel and you see what they see, that's going to take a very special toll, you know, and we see that in depictions of FBI profilers who have to empathize with horrific killers and such. This is just the next step further. So in that regard, she falls very much into the tradition of the hard-boiled classic American detective. She's got a lot of angst on her soul. So.
I'd be interested to learn more about that. Now, she has a team with her, too. She's got, in the book that just came out, she's got three people working with her. Do you want to describe them a little bit? Because I think they add a little something to the story, too.
Yeah. So there's a fellow named Mendez who I describe him to Chris. Oh, by the way, Chris Finoglio was the artist on this, we should say, because he did a wonderful job giving everybody very distinct faces and personalities. So there's Mendez who I've told Chris, just think of a 40-year-old Wes Studi, you know. This is a big guy you don't want to mess with, you know. And many of us know Wes Studi from like Michael Mann's films, Last of the Mohicans, Heat. It was a mystery man. He's a great actor. So, you know, I wanted to have that type of tough guy as kind of the muscle on the team. And then we got Angeles, who's a younger female protege of Bloodworth, who handles a lot of the tech. All right. And then we have, to counterbalance Mendez, who's kind of the tough guy and kind of the muscle, we have Simonson, who's kind of a younger guy, a bookish type. There's an actor named Mari Starling, who's on Homeland, who plays a guy that handles a lot of surveillance and stuff for Carrie on that show. And I really like him and just the way he looks. And so he was somewhat of an influence on the character. So we have kind of a diverse bunch. And then Bloodworth herself, she's leading lady. She's, you know, the Emily Blunt type, you know, I suppose, but she's just tough as nails. So yeah, so we got a good diverse group of crime fighters there. And yeah, like I said, they're doing good. Their minds are good. They're doing the right thing, but it's just terribly unethical, really, what they're doing. You know, yeah, it brings up a lot of questions.
Of course, in the future, just the ethics of this may not be quite so questionable, depending on what's happened. So one of the things I really liked, too, was that when she enters his mind, she can kind of choose which mode she wants to go into. She says, render the subject and put me in third person. So she gets to observe. Can she also go in first person?
Yeah. Initially, in the comic, when we see her, she's questioning this bank teller, and then she goes to the bank teller's memories to see the events unfold the way he remembers them. And at first, she's in first person. She's seeing what he's seeing. And then she wants to go outside of him and stand in third person and observe the whole scene as an impartial viewer, you know? So she's able to do that. But they do is, before it goes into his memories, what they do is they go through the room and they scan it in 3D. And they build up a database of how the room is looking right now. And then they merge his memories with how the room is looking now to fill in the gaps in memory. Because if she's watching him being a teller, doing stuff, he's not going to remember what's happening behind him or something like that. So they can put in placeholder images from the data they've collected in the room. And so it's a matter of trying to piece together what he remembers from how the scene, how it looks in the aftermath, and trying to fill in the blanks in between. And that's where the solution to the mystery is always going to lie. You know, it's never going to happen right there in the memory right in front of them, because that would be too easy. You know, the criminals have figured out how to do things and how to backtrack and kind of try to fool the FBI with their, you know, with false memories and whatnot.
Yeah, because that's – not to give away too much, but one of the things that happens is when she gets into his mind, there are certain things that he's trying to keep away from her, and there are steps that he takes that I was kind of intrigued by in order to do this. And you mentioned this was a possibility, that they know this might happen now because it's apparently all over the place. And he does things to make that happen, but she's too smart for him on certain levels. And I don't want to spoil it, but there are things that are good, that she's also on the same level, probably a little more advanced than he is, because she is understanding that people might be trying to stop their ability to find out what's going on. And, of course, that's going to lead to a great cat and mouse and chess games that come up. Some people are probably going to be better prepared to be able to deal with her than others are.
Yeah, and some people are going to have technology and whatnot that are on par with what she has. And she's going to be dealing with people that are rogue military and rogue government agents and whatnot that have technology to thwart what she's doing, you know. So Yeah, there's all level of criminals that she's going to be dealing with. But she has this Sherlock Holmes kind of sense and ability to survey scenes and profile people and profile situations. And she's better than everybody else at that. So she's a force to be reckoned with for sure.
That's pretty cool. I love the way the story progresses because it's a typical mystery. Something happens. We're not exactly sure what happened. Mm-hmm. And slowly you unfold the mystery. And that's always the best thing. When we get to the end and find out what really happened, I really like that. I was very much going like, wow, that's really good. And I could see these characters are going to be really formidable in the war on crime.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very, very cool. And I just hope there's going to be more of this because I like it. You mentioned Chris. I did want to mention, I really like his art. Of course, he had done Red City with you in the past.
Yep.
And I enjoyed his art on that, too. He has a nice, clear, dynamic style that I think really works well with what you call future crime. I like that quite a lot. Is that like a trademark? Did you trademark that or something? How did that work?
That's my hashtag that I came up with.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so that's kind of a sub-branding I'd like to be able to use more in the future. I have other stories I want to tell under that branding, in this world, in fact.
Very cool. So does this happen in the world of Red City by any chance?
Well, it would be – if it was, it would probably be like 300 years before Red City, at least. So,
okay, gotcha. Okay,
yeah, very Red City is going to be like in the year 25, 2600, something like that, that's advanced.
Mm-hmm.
But I have other stories, though, that have not been published yet that I'd like to tell in this world.
Oh, very cool, because I'd like to see them, because this was a really gripping story to see the people and interacting with the stuff. And, I remember the shivers I got when they started to be able to go inside their heads and start to be able to think. And I just kind of was like, yikes. So for me, this was a great story. I like a story that sort of gets that reaction that I have to go to the next page to find out what's going to happen next. So I think it was so well written and really nice and fast moving and with good characters, really interesting stuff. So as always, I really like your work and this Bloodworth is really terrific. I just think it's great.
Thank you.
Now I've got to ask one thing about the logo. There's in between the words Blood and Worth, there's what looks like that little eye in the triangle from the dollar bill.
Yeah.
I don't want to get spoil anything, but I just find that's kind of fascinating because now that eye is never going to mean the same thing to me anymore. When I look at my dollar bill, I'm going to look at it and go, are they watching through that?
That's kind of what we were going for.
Okay, very good. Well, it creeped me out. I was looking at it going like, ooh, I know what that is and I know where that comes from. And this is why I like to use plastic anymore.
Yeah, there's a company logo that you will see throughout, especially the opening pages. The company's called New Thought, and she just may be tangling and contending with them a little more. They're creating a lot of these social products that people are using for uploading and sharing of memories. You'll see the logo actually on the cover, kind of below the logo there, below the Bloodworth logo. You'll see the New Thought logo, and then you'll see it in the opening pages. And it's kind of a play on the logo of that company and kind of a play on the logo of what's on the dollar bill and this kind of Illuminati sort of idea. Yeah. And this big brother, they're watching, what have you. So, yeah.
Well, I got to ask one more question. It was on the back page. It says the story. And you describe in the first paragraph what seems to be what's going on in this book. But then there's a second paragraph that I didn't see in this book.
And yeah, that's what's going to be coming.
Oh, it is? Okay, good. Well, I don't want to spoil it then because I encourage people, get the book, read the back page, which has some really interesting stuff about the characters and where they might go in the future if this does really well, and I hope it does. With Comixology and stuff, do you have any way to know or measure what's going to be a big success? Because with digital, it's kind of hard to know.
Oh, I can't say that I can predict it. That's a matter of marketing and, typing in the zeitgeist and whatnot. But they do keep you very attuned with your sales. You get sales reports every so often, pretty often. So then, so you have an idea of how well you're doing.
Okay. Yeah. Well, just do you have a measure at which if you hit that goal, you will continue on? That's mainly what I'm asking. I don't need to know what it is. I just need to know, are you aiming for something? And if you get there, will you continue? Is that what's going on?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Yeah, it's a matter of what the cash flow is going to be.
Okay. Well, that's good.
Keep paying, Chris.
Yeah, because I like the book. I'd really like to see more of it. I'm going to encourage as many folks as I can to get out and get this book and read it because I really like it. There's not nearly enough mystery. You know, Detective Comics doesn't even have mysteries in it anymore. Right. And so for me, a mystery and trying to figure out what's going on is something that's a real pleasure. So whenever you do that, I really like that because I liked Red City for the same thing. There were puzzles that had to be unraveled, and I really liked that. And the same thing with this is that when we discover what's going on, I honestly didn't think that was what was happening. So I love that. I love to be surprised. I really do.
Good, good. I love mysteries. Everything I write ends up being somehow encased in a mystery story, and that's just how I tend to operate. It's hard for me to do anything else other than write a mystery story. So, yeah, that's where I live. That's where I like to go.
I love that. I think that's such a great thing because we don't challenge our minds enough, I really think. When we read stories, oftentimes it's just straightforward stuff. And I like something that makes me think. So I always like your writing and good things about that. So great, great work. So let's get on to, I want to follow up on your other books. We talked a little bit about Red City. Is there another storyline or another story coming from Red City?
That's what we're doing for now. Red City came out last year. We did issues 1-4 and our collected edition came out in December. Mm-hmm. We're on hiatus for that for now, but I hope to come back and be able to do more Red City. Again, there's a huge universe of stories that I'd love to be able to tell. Mm-hmm. In Red City. So that's the thing working independent comics and create our own comics, though. It's just you do what you can when you can because it's just very difficult. You get to fund everything, get everything done on your own. But it's very rewarding when it does happen. So I'm very happy that we were able to get that volume of Red City out. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I hope to be able to continue that in the future. Also love to continue it in other media, pitching it as a TV show and such. Mm. So we'll see if any of that happens.
That'd be perfect for sci-fi.
Oh, I would love to see that.
That would just be ideal because the moment you said that television, my mind immediately went to sci-fi. It's, oh, man, because they could use that on sci-fi. That would be a nice way to do it. Mm-hmm. A good way to go with that.
I think so.
Oh, yeah, let's hope sci-fi is listening. So I would like to see that. Now, what about Moriarty? Have you completed your work on Moriarty or do you have other stories you want to tell?
I have other stories I'd like to tell. And in fact, we did do a new Moriarty story that was included at the end of Red City Volume 1. Mm-hmm. So it's like a bonus story. It's a 10-page short story called Moriarty Endgame. Mm-hmm. And so that's included with the Red City Volume 1 collection. And then we also did a standalone release for Moriarty Endgame back in February.
Right.
That is that was a standalone digital release that is available on Comixology. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the entire Moriarty catalog is on Comixology. Issues 1-9, our first two story arcs, then volumes 1 and 2, and then our collected edition hardcover that collected our whole entire story, both stories, is on Comixology, and then also Moriarty Endgame. Moriarty Endgame is 99-cent download, so if you want to sample a little Moriarty, 99 cents. That was interesting. We had a lot of fun with Moriarty Endgame because actually we went outside of the continuity of a regular series and did a crazy what-if story. Mm-hmm. And had Moriarty and Holmes battling it out against a post-apocalyptic landscape with mech warriors, tanks, and all kinds of crazy stuff. But at its heart, it's still got that fantastical mystery element and the character of Moriarty trying to find his way in the universe amidst all this crazy stuff. It's funny. I'm quite amazed. Like Anthony Dietschidue worked on that, was the artist on that. Mm-hmm. He was the main series artist on Moriarty. And what me and Anthony were able to get into 10 pages is kind of mind-boggling, you know, and I'm not sure how it happened. It was kind of magical.
Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was terrific. When it came out in February, I got it right away and I was reading it and I thought it was terrific. So, just good stuff. When you were saying that, suddenly I got the image of Moriarty showing up in Red City somehow. And I was kind of like, could he possibly last that long and be there in Red City? That would be fascinating.
Moriarty could show up any place. Comic because as a story, he's got the strength to be pretty much long living, everlasting, what have you. Mm-hmm. He'll figure his way onto Mars, you know.
I don't doubt it. I think I saw you at a convention not too long ago, and I got the hardcover Moriarty, which I really like, and you autographed it for me, which I appreciate. It's so good to have because, man, those were great fun to read. It's so unusual for me. I'm so used to Sherlock Holmes' perspective. So to see it from the other perspective, from Moriarty's point of view, was a lot of fun. That was really a great creative way to do it, I thought.
Oh, thanks. It was a great journey getting Moriarty done. Anthony and I had done a book together that I put out under my Danger Cat banner. It was Danger Cat's Prophet, which was a supernatural spaghetti western and a lot of noir elements and supernatural horror elements. That's on Comixology too. published under Danger Cat. We had finished that up, and I just had this idea, hey, let's do something about Professor Moriarty, and had to kind of talk him into it, because he's like, oh, period stuff, and you know, I sold him on, oh, it'll have a lot of great genre elements to it. And he's like, okay. So we did the first issue on our own as a Danger Cat book, and we're starting on the second issue, and then Image came along and picked it up, and this was back in like 2009, before all the Sherlock Holmes craze hit. Mm-hmm. No, so I think Eric Stevenson, Image, saw our submission. I just submitted it back then they were taking snail mail submissions. Mm-hmm. I just submitted it cold. Mm-hmm. You know, it was on a pile somewhere. Mm-hmm. And I think he saw that and just is like, yeah, he probably saw that he was able to kind of forecast out and see the Sherlock craze coming and mm-hmm. thought this is something we should probably do. And voila, we had an Image book. But yeah, it was quite a journey getting that together, working on that for about 40 years. To get those two volumes of stories out, and a lot of adventures. Mm-hmm.
Well, if folks are listening have not read Moriarty, I highly encourage you to get in there and get that stuff, because it's very good. It's very different, because when Moriarty's there, you've got a very different perspective, and you're never exactly sure what's going on, because, you know, with Holmes, we've had his stories, and we kind of have an idea where they're going. With Moriarty, we don't know that, and so I really like that, because I've liked Sherlock Holmes, and I've read Sherlock Holmes stories for years, and it freshened the genre, the character for me, to see it from his perspective, so I was really happy with that.
Oh, yeah, thanks. Yeah, he has a unique view on the world, but he doesn't know that it's unique. He just thinks his way is the way. Mm-hmm. So in some ways, he's the most incredibly self-aware person there is. And in some ways, he's completely clueless, you know?
A genius is like that.
Yeah, exactly, because he just lives in such a fantastical world. He's this guy that just stares up into the stars and just sees everything.
Okay, you know? Now, any other projects you're working on that we should be aware of, Daniel?
Well, Bloodworth's what I am concentrating a lot of energy into right now. Other stuff involves some film projects and stuff that I'm working on that are under wraps, things that I'm hoping will get made, but we'll see.
Okay.
So I live in Los Angeles and Hollywood thing here, so always trying to make something happen there in that world. So
very cool.
That's a lot of time in that, yeah. And I'll be at New York Comic Con.
Yay.
Yes.
I'll see you there. Any other conventions you're going to attend besides that?
That's my last show that I'll be exhibiting for the year,
okay.
Being New York Comic Con. That usually kind of wipes me out.
Oh.
Yeah, so I always do really well there. That's my best show of the year, really. Mm-hmm. I come back there, it's kind of late in the year, and I'm like, okay, I'm done exhibiting for the year, you know? But yeah, I'll be there, and actually I will have exclusive print editions of Bloodworth available. Mm. Yeah, so the one-shot comic that you can get on Comixology will be in print form. So if you're a purist and you'd like to print a comic and can sign it for you, come by my table at New York Comic Con.
Yeah, save one for me, because I will be there too.
Yeah, excellent.
And I'll come by and I'll get that, because I think that's when I got the hardcover Moriarty last year, was at New York. So very good. Well, you know, Daniel, you always make great stuff, and it's always good to talk with you. So again, if you haven't gotten Bloodworth yet, you know, hurry to Comixology and get that right now. And when you get done downloading that, you can look for Moriarty and Red City, because all that stuff is great quality storytelling. So, Daniel, please keep it up, and we'll look forward to talking with you again sometime when the next projects are coming out.
Excellent. Yeah, I will be keeping it up, and I look forward to talking to you about it again.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne, as a man. From flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast, so you can keep reading your comics.
That's it for this week. Be back next week as we continue our countdown to episode 200. But until then, keep reading your comics.